Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Who here has never heard of Bernie Glassman? Okay. Well, Bernie is a preeminent teacher in the White Plum lineage, which is the lineage that this Zendo is in. And Maizumi Roshi came to the United States from Japan, out in L.A., and his first Dharma successor, the first person that he made a Zen teacher, was Bernie Glassman. And Bernie's a pretty iconoclastic guy. He's not a typical Zen teacher. And he's a Brooklyn-born Jew who was a scientist before he became a Zen teacher. And some of you have heard this before, but since I'm going to mention him, I just wanted to describe a little bit about who he is. And his expression, ultimately, in the beginning, he was a typical Zen teacher with a typical Zendo. But ultimately, I think it probably had to do with his Jewish roots and his Brooklyn roots. The expression of him as a Zen teacher became social action. He's led homeless retreats. He's done bearing witness vigils at places like Auschwitz, etc. And he was my first teacher. I didn't get Dharma transmission from Bernie, but he was the first teacher that I sat with for a while. You might have, if you've seen the recent, I think it was Shambhala's son, he's on the cover with
Jeff Bridges,
right, yeah. So I read recently that Bernie, who, as I said, his expression of Zen practices social activism, defined social engagement as, quote, working with parts of himself that are underserved. Now, I think his choice of words is made to convey that every aspect of society is himself, that there's no separation, and that he chooses to work with those aspects of society / himself that are not cared for which there is little compassion. The poor, the homeless, those traumatized by war, those victimized by discrimination, etc. Likewise, I think that another aspect of spiritual practice could also be defined as working with parts of ourselves that are underserved, that have not been healed, for which we have very little compassion. And this statement refers to those parts of ourselves that hold the wounding that we have experienced throughout our lives, particularly from childhood. And they appear in our personality as anger, shame, loneliness, worthlessness, numbing, dissociation, anxiety, depression, etc. And it's because these parts of ourselves are underserved, many of us experience chronic emotional pain and suffering. And if we work to heal these aspects of ourselves, to bear witness to them, to surround them with compassion, we can free ourselves up to realize who we truly are. Now, Bernie's view is what you could call the macro expression of Zen practice, working to heal those parts of society that are underserved, that is, unhealed. What I'm talking about could be called the micro expression of Zen, which is working to heal the parts of our individual selves that are neglected. And because they're neglected, we function in pain and are so much less than we can really be. Now, the two of these views are totally interrelated. As we heal ourselves, we become more and more connected to the world around us. The world becomes more and more who we are. We naturally have compassion for what's around us because as we heal and continue our spiritual practices, the sense of disconnection, the sense of self-centeredness dissolves. As we heal ourselves, we become more clearly able to serve the underserved parts of our greater selves, which is society, as Bernie points out. Many people come to practice because they are suffering and they hope Zazen will provide peace of mind. Let me give a hypothetical example. A person has a part of themselves that is filled with anger. Much of this anger has been absorbed from living with angry, unhappy parents. Another aspect of this anger is the anger that they feel toward their parents for the way their parents treated them. But because it was not safe in this family to speak about anger, or safe to be vulnerable enough to express it, this person creates a wall around the anger. For a child that has no other options can't move out. It's the best they can do to be walled off as a way of being minimally safe. But because they've cut off a major piece of their emotional selves, they become depressed, inhibited, anxious, shame-filled, incapable of intimacy, and as they get older, usually around the teen years, begin to have outbursts of uncontrolled anger and so forth. At the same time that this is happening, they develop an internal story that they are defective, that they're less than, worthless, undeserving of compassion. Someone with this legacy is going to have great difficulty connecting with others or feeling empathy for others. They will feel disconnected and alone. They will experience very few moments of open-heartedness. This story that I'm describing is like a trance which the person believes wholeheartedly. It's who they think they are. So what can Zen practice offer this person? And what can't Zen practice offer a person like the one I described? These are the things that I think practice can offer. Firstly, I think Zen practice can offer community, which we call Sangha, a container that's a safe place for self-exploration. Two, the practice of mindfulness, the ability to pay attention, will help the person see through the trance resulting from their trauma. Three, meditation provides physical and emotional stability. When the emotional going gets shaky, the practice will help us remain stable. If you think of the basic instruction for Zazen, is you sit and you count the breaths in the beginning. And every time, if you look at me, you know, you start thinking, you know, you sort of go off center, you've lost attention. And the instruction is to just go back. You don't beat yourself up, you don't denigrate yourself. All you do is simply notice that you've gone off, you're thinking, and you just come back to your center. And you do that thousands and thousands of times in the course of practicing. And subtly, one of the things that's happening from doing that is you're teaching yourself to be centered. So that's what I mean by learning to be stable. So the fourth thing that I think the practice can offer is that when done with guidance, meditation can be a container to explore and get to know some of these unhealed parts of ourselves. You can actually use the space that we develop in meditation and specifically take a sitting period and just sit and explore your inner realm, noticing what you're feeling in your body, what thoughts are coming up, and just getting to know that inner landscape. You don't have to do that all the time. You know, generally we sit with whatever the practice is that we've developed. But you can take this space, and if there's an upset that's happened in your life, you can take this quiet space and explore it. As the sitting ripens, the person may also be able to experience a more open-hearted relationship with the world, begin to sense the truth of who they are in relation to the world around them, and ultimately have hope that they will be able to heal these wounds that they've carried for so long. And six, the practice can teach them to have a more conscious relationship with their mind. With the guidance of a teacher, they can learn to see beyond their stories. They can, in fact, learn to see that their stories are just stories. It's not who they are. They can gain insight into the difference between pain and suffering. Just being alive will inevitably subject everyone to pain. But it's the stories that we tell ourselves about the pain that we're in that creates suffering. Pain is inevitable. Suffering doesn't have to be. If somebody is mean to me or shortchanges me, and I create a story about what a worthless piece of crap I am, nobody cares about me, well, I'm creating that story. I'm taking what happened and creating a story that's going to make me suffer. Conversely, I could look at what just happened as an opportunity to examine myself and the way that I move in the world. Did I do something to deserve this? Or is this the person's problem? And this is an opportunity for me to learn how to respond maturely and not reactively. So it's that story that we create in response or sometimes in reaction to what happens that affects the outcome and affects whether or not we suffer. What the practice of Zazen cannot offer is direct psychotherapeutic healing of these old wounds. This must be done in a psychotherapeutic setting with a therapist or a psychologist's help. Therapists who are trained to work in particular with trauma. Part of the reason for giving this talk is many times people come thinking that if they really learn to sit well, all of their psychological baggage or their wounds will go away. And it doesn't work that way. That's why you hear these terrible stories about teachers who are alcoholics or take advantage of students. They may have a deep enlightenment, but they have not healed their psychological wounds. They're incomplete. But the two practices, the psychological and the spiritual, can exist side by side and be a very powerful vehicle for healing and for reconnecting to the world around us in a healthy way. And I'm going to end with a quote from Sartre, who said, "Freedom is what you do with what's been done to you." Thank you.